Anger, frustration, and accusations flying in both directions. Sexual assault is much in the news right now, as allegations ranging from unwanted advances to rape are being leveled at Hollywood heavyweights, media executives, and lawmakers. Sadly, these stories are not new, but will national attention and outrage change behavior or simply drive it deeper into the shadows? We're discussing how to stop people with power from abusing those without it. Today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Far too often when people, women and sometimes men, come forward and describe being victimized by someone else, they are met with ridicule, accusations of lying, or threats of legal action rather than belief and support. Why is this when the rate of sexual assault is well known? Nearly 40% of Alaska women surveyed in 2010 reported experiencing some kind of sexual assault in their life. Alaska leads the nation in rape. So what does it take to lower the rates and increase support? We've got two people in the studio today who can assist in that quest. Julie Dale is the manager of prevention and education for STAR, Standing Together Against Rape. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And also in the studio is Susie Pearson. Susie is the executive director of AWAKE, Abused Women's Aid in Crisis. Hi, Susie.
Good morning.
Both of you have been doing this work for a long time. Susie for a couple of decades,
yes.
A couple of decades, and Julie for 5 years. You Alaskans can also join our conversation. Have you experienced sexual harassment or assault? How do you talk to your sons and daughters about respectful behavior and respectful language? What can be done to create true change? Give us a call. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-8255. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. So how... when we talk about the scope of this problem, and I mentioned the statistic, 37%, nearly 40%, how large do you think it really is? Almost every woman I've ever discussed this issue with has a story in this regard, from smaller encounters with someone acting sleazy, making them feel uncomfortable, or saying rude things, to sexual assault and rape. What do you think the real numbers are? Who wants to take that? Susie?
She's talking about your area of expertise,
okay,
ma'am.
You know, and, you know, we look at these numbers, and like you said, every single person you talk to has a story, has an experience, be it themselves or somebody that they know and care about. And so we know and we can speculate that these numbers are a lot higher than what's reported, because as we're seeing right now and as we know, it's really difficult to report. It's really difficult to disclose if you've been harmed by sexual violence or domestic violence. It's something that isn't often talked about. And but, you know, I have the same experience. That's why I got into this work, was every person I knew had a story. They had something that they'd experienced, and I wanted to get involved and try to prevent that from happening.
Mm. Susie, do you want to comment on that? In, you know, in the time that you've been working in this field, what do you think the real numbers should reflect?
Well, I can tell you from just providing services at AWAKE that in the 22 years that we have experienced significant increase in the number of people needing shelter, that we have just in the past decade alone, but our shelter has been at or over capacity more than 50% of the time for 50, you know, a decade, that our 52-bed shelter has been significantly in demand, and our staff is just dealing with those folks in crisis. This is emergency shelter. This is an immediate demand that people have. And so just seeing that increase of people seeking shelter is something that I can say is reflected in the increase of people coming to us.
And let's examine that a little bit. What are the factors that are contributing to that? I'm sure that there's a myriad of them.
Mm-hmm.
Increased population, the opioid epidemic is probably impacting some of this. What about the fact that people, or are people feeling more like they can come forward, or that they don't have to tolerate this behavior? Do you think that is part of a piece of it as well?
That would be a part of it. We've definitely seen an increase in the issue of drugs and alcohol impacting those that we serve. Also, the lack of services in what we do for the community. There's lack of substance abuse treatment. Mental illness is a significant issue as related to depression and anxiety, and people getting that supportive services, even when they come to shelter, has been a challenge. We just don't have the places for people to go to get that support. So they're coming to Awake. It's a safe place for them to be, not just from an abusive relationship, but also dealing with their own issues. And also a lack of housing. In order to leave an abusive relationship, there's a couple things that make it critical for a family to successfully leave an abusive relationship. And one of those is having a safe place to go after shelter. If you don't have housing available, then when you're looking at your array of options, one of them is to go back to your abuser. Oftentimes you've been in that relationship a long time. There's isolation. And so you can't go back to friends or family. So there's no housing. You don't have the family and friend support. So you go back to your abuser.
Right. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. And we are talking about how to end sexual assault, abuse, domestic violence, all of the negatives that we see reflected in many stories currently, but this is not a new problem. It's a very, very old problem. And we want to talk about how we can help change that culture of bad behavior. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. In the studio with me, we have Susie Pearson, who is the executive director of Awake, and Julie Dale, who is with STAR and is, let's see, Julie, what did I say? You are the manager of prevention and education for
that
STAR.
That's correct.
So, recent allegations against lawmakers, candidates, and the president have resulted in threats to sue women for lying. This seems to be a recent tactic to silence women who have said they've been abused. You've both worked in this field for some years. Is this recent? It seems clearly aimed at making people drop their claims, intimidating them. But wouldn't proving an alleged lie be just as difficult as proving a long-ago assault? In other words, this seems like a weak tactic, strategy. Is it, or is it effective?
Well, you know, when we look at the dynamics of power-based personal violence, including sexual violence and domestic violence, it says it all right there in the title. It's power-based personal violence. And it seems like this tactic of suing for allegations is another ploy for power and control over an individual. And it does tie into the dynamics of sexual violence. I don't know if it's as new necessarily, but I think that it's out there more. We're seeing it more. And I know that, again, it's part of that power and control dynamic. they're once again saying, I have more power over you, which is often what's happening whenever there's sexual violence or domestic violence. They're utilizing their stature, their role in power. And it does enable the silence.
Mm-hmm. Let's discuss the ways that allegations are dealt with and what that may portend for the health of an organization in the future. National Public Radio, NPR, was recently in the headlines when the chief of the news division, Mike Oreskes, admitted sexual misconduct against women. Tough questions were asked of leadership on air. Some of these charges stem from the 1990s. But Oreskes apologized, was asked to resign, he did. When you look at a case like this, what grade would you give them for how they handled it?
I would have to say I'm not as familiar with it, but the important thing for when I'm looking at this is accountability. However, that never excuses the behavior, never.
Sure.
Environment of acknowledging that that has happened, but also moving forward, making changes in the environment that makes it unacceptable to ever be a conduct that occurs in your company.
In this particular case, I did not hear anyone suggest or offer doubt about the stories. There was no one that came forward that said, well, some of this happened in the 1990s. How come they're just coming forward now? So that to me seemed like a better response, that there was belief that action was taken. And when you work with outside organizations, how do you talk to them about how to prevent this kind of misconduct? What are the recommended steps? What should companies do, employers do, to make sure that there's no tolerance for this?
Well, for me, I would say that that's not my area of expertise. And instead, when I'm going into workplaces and discussing in regards to domestic violence is how to support their employees and recognize signs of domestic violence and creating policies that will support victims, allowing leave time for them to go to court or to deal with medical issues, and ensuring that they're educating the rest of their staff about how to do this, having safety plans around addressing it. Because if you look at most of the mass murders that most, I would say, but not maybe recent, but a lot of the mass murders that do happen, it centers around a domestic violence situation. And as such, employers need to be fully aware and engaged in how to deal with these kinds of situations. So that's more a WAKES focus when we're talking about violence.
And what do you say in regard to what they should be watching for? What are the signs? What are your instructions to employers about what to look for in terms of red flags?
Well, for a lot of victims, once again, it's about silence, and it's about the power base and the abuser controlling what the person does, both inside the relationship, but also when they're outside the relationship, and what they're projecting. So for employers, what we're talking about are subtle signs, things around how often they're, you know, calling in sick, looking for behavior changes, looking for oftentimes their stalking techniques and control techniques that might be them calling and texting all the time, which disrupts the workplace. And people get punished for that. So if you're told or you get written up because you're getting texted all the time, well, I can't tell you all the time that that's my boyfriend, that if I don't answer that I'm going to go home and get harmed. And so we talk about those things and how to broach them appropriately. And depending on the size of the company, if HR is the most appropriate place to do it, but smaller companies don't have HR. And so how do I recognize this? And if I do approach it, the person says no, how do I do that even though I have suspicion? So we also talk about how the employer might feel and still protect people, both the individual but the entire company, from potential harm. And so it's important that if you do have somebody who's got a protective order or anything like that in the workplace, that you be aware of the laws and what your rights are as an employer.
It seems like having a good HR department is important, although it depends on how well it's run and what their policies are, of course. Mm-hmm. But for a small company without one, it seems like that would be really difficult and kind of a tricky area, mm-hmm. where you're balancing someone's right to privacy with a company's concern about safety, not only of that employee, but other employees, mm-hmm. in the workplace. What are the legal implications for how far an employer can go? At some point, it seems like they're going to have to sort of just put it out there that they're ready to support, but then they've got to back off. I mean, where's the legal line there?
Well, as far as Alaska laws, they're going to have to follow general labor laws and their own, you know, guidelines around disciplinary action and all of that. If they're getting denial from the person, they can either go on, you know, this person says it's not happening, therefore we're choosing not to do anything, or they may still continue to move forward and say these are basic safety policies that we want to put in place and actions. And a lot of the smaller companies that we've worked with, they have been very protective of their employees and supportive in ensuring that they get the needs that get their needs met in regards to ensuring income in their family and also supporting them in getting access to services. Oftentimes we've had employers bring their staff to us. Mm. And so and that's often more often in small companies, but it's difficult as an employer. It really is, because domestic violence invades the business significantly when it's happening.
When you say they bring employees to you, so they bring them in for some sort of training or just increased awareness about what to watch for?
Well, as far as if they bring in the victim, it's only if that person is, of course, consenting to participate in services. But normally we will go to the workplace and actually do training and work with folks to better understand how to address the situation and be engaged safely.
And I know, Julie, this is definitely your area, this idea of training and raising awareness. So what would you like to add to this idea of how organizations do or don't handle this and what you would advise in that regard?
Well, I think, policies and procedures set in place is very, very important. And kind of echoing what Susie said, identifying the behaviors that are unsafe. So how do we identify behaviors that might create a hostile work environment or be identified as sexual harassment? And knowing, what is sexual harassment? I think so often we have these conversations and when we go into organizations and businesses, they're not identifying what behaviors are, what is sexual harassment or what is sexual violence, what is domestic violence. So I think a big part of that is training not only HR, but the other staff members, our community as a whole. And the place that you work is a community, and a community that you spend a lot of time in. And so being able to have your fellow community members help identify what potentially is safe or unsafe and be there as supporters as well is something that we talk a lot about when we talk to organizations about sexual harassment and sexual violence prevention.
This is Talk of Alaska. We're discussing how to end sexual assault and domestic violence. Susie Pearson, Executive Director of Awake, is in the studio with us, and also Julie Dale, who is the Manager of Prevention. And why do I keep forgetting this? So sorry.
It's okay. It's Manager of Prevention and Education.
I need some education.
No worries.
You can join our conversation as well. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422 is the number to call. And you can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to go to the phones for a moment. Roger is in White Mountain. Hello, Roger.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. America has always been a bully country, from blunderbuss to lust. As our country becomes more secular, maybe it's time to go back to our Bible Belt roots. Whatever happened to the Bible Belt, which kept the vast portions of Americans in line? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger, for the call. there was me for a moment there. He presents this issue of religion as a way to combat sexual assault. How do you feel about that? I know it's kind of a touchy area to mm-hmm. wade into.
Sure.
It's an emotional topic for folks to discuss religion when it comes to these kinds of issues. Yeah. But Julie?
You know, that is a really tough one to talk about because there's, you know, we look at our society and we're a melting pot and we're so diverse. But, you know, my brain immediately went to the golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I mean, and I don't know if that's even the right way to word that, but you know, it goes back to that community accountability. And there are things that we can do regardless of what is your religion? What are your beliefs? All in all, it comes down to we don't want to see people harmed. And if that's a conversation and a point where you can start having that productive conversation and starting to ask people to take action to prevent this type of violence, I think that that's a great place to start. Because opening up this conversation, being able to have this conversation is so important. And if, like I said, if that's where that hits you and that's home to you and that's authentic, then start having those conversations with your community. And I think people are going to be receptive.
I agree. But it seems like it stems more from cohesion and respect within a family, because we know that churches are not immune from allegations of bad behavior. So it's not just the church that can heal things.
Correct.
It's the culture and the mindset of respect and teaching self-awareness and respect and being able to speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Susie? As far as when we're looking at domestic violence and some of the reasons that victims stay silent, we talk about faith and that there are oftentimes messages within both the Bible and that are presented that women are supposed to be and behave in a certain way. And so also the expectation that the church is the place to resolve all family problems, when oftentimes there might be deeper issues that a pastor might not be as experienced with. Some are based in and actually have pastoral kind of therapy skills. However, it does create isolation in some cases. So it's important to think of that sort of history of what kind of religion someone is experiencing and the foundation that is put in place within that. And there are also oftentimes basic tenets of faith, depending what faith it is, that the power of women is minimized and controlled by men. So,
well, and too often it seems that women are encouraged to be meek, to be accommodating. Nurturing is sometimes confused with being quiet rather than loving, which is a different way of looking at what nurturing is. And the language that we use for aggressive women compared to aggressive men is very different. Mm-hmm. Women have meltdowns. Men are aggressive leaders. And so much of this is very subtle. And I know that when I have these conversations with people, sometimes they sort of roll their eyes like, oh, come on, really, a word? I just had a conversation the other day with a man talking about this topic. And he said, well, you know, I compliment people. I see a woman on the street and I say, when I say, hi, cutie, why is that bad? I said, okay, don't use that language. Why must you make a comment about someone's physical appearance when you don't know them? Have you thought through that that might make this person uncomfortable? And maybe for you, you would love it if a woman, because that's what he reflected back to me, was like, well, I'd be happy if someone said that. I said, but you perhaps have not dealt with this from the time you were very, very young, a barrage coming at you constantly, like many women have. And you have to try to open your mind a little bit about thinking about that. Don't say hi, cutie. Just say hello. That would be very nice. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Francine is in Anchorage. Hi, Francine.
Hi. This is Francine Harbor. I have kind of both an academic and personal perspective on this. First of all, thank you very much for having the show. I absolutely love the expression power-based personal violence. Oh, my gosh, I've needed that phrase for 60 years. And the other thing is I think all people of compassion in America owe a huge apology to Anita Hill because of what happened to her in 1991 and how it wasn't believed. And then I think it is important to go back to the past and remember that children back then, which is when my own abuse situations happened, back then we were not touched. We were not told what is good touch, what is bad touch. So we've had some progress, but I still think that we need something like a 911 number for children and abused adults who can call, and that gets a lot of publicity, but who can call to report something like, I'm not sure if this was a bad touch or a good touch. Can I talk to somebody about this? And if our country really thought this was important, we would do that. But I think, and not to get into feminist politics too much, but I really think that this is the control mechanism that the people who are invested in this type of power abuse want to stay in that position of power, and they don't want to give that up. So I think the historical perspective is very important. I think people should start doing what good doctors are doing now, which is when people fill out their history sheets, one of the questions they ask is, have you experienced sexual abuse in your past? So that a person can be approached with a trauma-informed sense of care. So that's just my perspective, and thank you for the discussion. And we could get rid of sexual-based abuse if we really wanted to. This is not a hard thing to do. If we either shamed men mostly who won't stop doing this, or really trained men, boys, not to do this, that cutie pie is not okay. And if we got a national priority of some place to report as important as 911 or as the Amber Alerts, we could really help children like I was when I started getting molested and abused when I was 8 years old. I could have gone somewhere because the people who were doing this knew I was unprotected. Knew my father was, you know, not in the home anymore, and that my mother wasn't well. So those are the three suggestions I have for how I think this problem could be, if not eliminated, really minimized.
Thank you. Thank you, Francine, so much for your candid comments and your thoughts. I wanted to, reflect a little on a couple of things that she said. One, the idea of a number. And I'm sure that both of your organizations have these numbers that people can call to discuss these very issues. We'll link to those on our website so that people can find those numbers if they want to call and discuss concern over these issues. And also, I know that with doctors, there are doctors, especially pediatricians, who are taking time to really talk with children. I was talking with a friend who has a small child, and she was very, very pleased that the doctor took the time to talk to the child about what kind of touch is appropriate when it's a doctor, when it's your parent, and when it's others. And she said it was very helpful, and coming from a medical professional, she really appreciated this additional support in the mix of her own teachings with her child. And that's when it has to start, is that very, very young age. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about how to end bad behavior, sexual assault, domestic violence, how we can all be involved, and we'll take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing ending sexual assault, a culture of bad behavior in many, many areas of our society. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide. 1-800-478-TALK is the number statewide. You can also, if you're in Anchorage, call 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Bill is in Anchorage. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for the show. Anyway, I was just thinking that as a man, when it gets dark, I don't even think about it. As a woman, you have to change what you do. And so it's really, I'd just like to, if more men thought about the fact that we are living in an entitled space, just when it comes to darkness, it may open up awareness to what the other things that aren't fair to women. And so, like I say, it was just so obvious to me at one point that I just kind of went, oh my goodness, you know, this is crazy. Guys don't even think about this. And that's really all I got right now. But I just really enjoy the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bill, for that comment, because that is such a clear and true statement. When I was a peer counselor, a volunteer counselor at a safe house years ago, that's one of the things that we talked a lot about was when you're walking, make sure that you're aware of, are there a lot of bushes along this walkway? Look around, all the way around you from time to time. Make sure you know who's in your space and who may be coming up on you. If it's dark, you might want to choose a different route. Yes, women do have to think about these things and should think about these things. And Bill mentioning that men sort of have a luxury, I guess you could put it that way, of not having to make that consideration so much, is one way into helping to increase understanding and awareness of what other gender people have to deal with. One of the things that Francine said was shaming. We talked a bit about that during the break. This idea of shaming people who are perpetrating bad behavior, that makes me a bit uncomfortable because I feel like shaming, I don't know that that's what we need to do as much as we need to just hold people accountable in a way that's clear, direct, and takes that, what could possibly backfire when you talk about shaming. Please comment on that. Julie, do you want to start?
Sure. I think that that accountability piece is so important. And I think, you know, what we can do as community members, if we see behavior that's not okay, if it's something that we know is wrong, if it's something that's making us uncomfortable, we can say something and we can tell the person, I see this, it's not okay. This isn't how we act in our community. And it's, you know, you don't have to do that in a way that is shaming individuals. But there are things that we can do as community members to help uphold that accountability and, you know, for us to speak up and say something. I think that our community is primed right now to see a change in social norms. And that change is so important and something that we can do.
Susie, anything to add to that? Or?
Well, for me, as far as shaming, one of the reasons that victims don't leave is because they are ashamed that they're in that abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of changing the language, I guess, and the accountability is a key piece. But the approach to abusers is there's, you know, obviously denial on their part, but how it's approached is also how much they push the victim back into more silence, because it can, you know, you told that person something, you know, just the barrage of emotional abuse that then results from that, and it creates more control. So finding ways to be more effective in our communication, oftentimes when, you know, like when Julie was talking about when you see something and your ability to say something, it might be an opportunity to actually focus on the victim. Do you need help? And if the abuser is saying, no, 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 she's fine, saying, no, I would really like to hear it from her. Are mm-hmm. you okay? Instead of, you know, listening to the person trying to minimize and control the situation. Does that make sense?
I absolutely agree mm-hmm. with that. And I have been in those situations. I was a bartender years ago. And there were times that I would have to intervene in these settings. And I would make direct eye contact with the woman and say, do you want me to do something?
Yes.
Should I call someone? And at some point, the painful thing is that then you have to back off. Because you can only intervene if they wish for you to do so. And in that moment, oftentimes they will say no because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. but there's little recourse that you have at that point in time, it seems, and that was always a great frustration to me. I want to bring up a comment in an email that we just got, but I want to give out the numbers again. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-TALK is the number statewide. 550-8422, 550-8422 in Anchorage. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. As this listener did, who says, they vehemently disagree that the NPR Oreskes case was handled well because women were believed, because this person says males are allowed a King's X pass by HR to learn that it's not appropriate to do things, which is true about this case with Oreskes. He was confronted about behavior many years earlier. It went through HR. The woman who had brought the claim said that she felt like it was handled appropriately. Again, maybe being too accommodating rather than saying, hey, get him out of here. So this behavior continued. Then he was fired. The emailer says, why don't we have a zero tolerance policy like people do with drugs and alcohol in their workplace? Why do we not have a zero tolerance policy? Unfortunately, it seems like it's not that cut and dried. And that's part of the problem, is that some of this is so subtle. I was at the Alaska Broadcasters Association conference last week, and there was a legal session on facing how you put good policies in place in the workplace to protect your workers from sexual assault and misconduct, harassment. And so often the attorneys had to say, when someone said, well, what about this case? Is a single incident enough to say this person's fired? And oftentimes their answer was, well, it depends. It seems like therein lies part of the problem. You can't just take a blood test or a other kind of test and say, yep, this is positive, you're out. How can we make clearer guidelines in that respect so that there's less wiggle room? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I would have to say that when we're looking at sexual assault and it's called misconduct now. Is that the new term? as opposed to sexual harassment, to me, which more clearly reflects the actual action, is that it truly comes down to the whole issue of power around gender. Historically, you go all the way back in time that it's only been in the past, you know, century or so that we've been able to get more of a voice in society as a whole. And so when we're looking at current relations, we're at a point of slow growth. I think the conversation happening the way it is incredible. A zero tolerance, I say that comes to social norms. That really is about the fact that how we each tolerate it as individuals and how we discuss it and make it a value in our life, that violence and harassment, and it is harassment, is never okay. I think that that's a really critical thing for people to understand. And it's not a zero tolerance in our community. And that's very frustrating for me, that you can be arrested for assaulting somebody that you say that you love multiple times and not serving time, whereas you assault a stranger and you end up getting time. So the lack of in our community in addressing violence it's across the board. And it's harassment, not misconduct.
Harassment. We're clear about that. Julie, do you want to add something? Or?
You know, I think, Susie and I have a lot of these conversations. And I think, it comes back to that, what is acceptable in our community. I know that we need to start having these conversations with our youth. We need to start talking to our youth when they're in kindergarten. Parents, obviously, about a different topic. But what is okay when you're in kindergarten? How do you treat other people? And we keep having this conversation. So when they're growing up, when they're getting into middle school and high school, grade school in some cases, and they're getting into relationships and they're identifying how they should be treating people in relationships, the conversations need to start at an early age. What's acceptable, what's not. And that needs to be a thread, something that's followed through all the way into people's careers and adulthood and into their families and lives.
I have to express a bit of frustration based on the fact that we have had this conversation so many times. We see this is something that happens across the board in politics, in media, in our state legislatures. We heard President Trump, when he was a candidate, caught on tape speaking very disparagingly about perpetrating violence, sexual violence against women. But that's not new either. Bill Clinton preyed on an intern in the White House. Mm-hmm. And there were legendary stories of the Kennedy presidency. So this is not a new story. Why is it so difficult to change this narrative and make it much clearer that this is, how does it keep chugging along as it has for decades?
Right. I think someone earlier called, and at some point we were talking about the language that we use when we have these conversations. And when we talk about someone who was assaulted, we use that language, someone who was assaulted, instead of saying someone assaulted that individual. Mm. I mean, it really does. Part of the way we have these conversations in general, you know, we take just by saying Sally was raped, we've taken the person who's done the harm completely out of that conversation. Instead of so-and-so raped Sally. Okay, well, there's accountability just in the way we're reframing these sentences. And I think that part of it is that. It's that gender, the gender norms, the power and control. And how do we have these conversations? I think for me, that's a really big part of it. The person who's harmed is not even in the conversation the majority of the time. Mm. And that the conversation needs to be around that person also.
Yeah.
Susie?
No, I think that's a very, very powerful statement. It is about reframing, and we consistently talk about the victim experiences as opposed to the action of the abuser or the perpetrator of the crime.
We have an email question from someone who says, I would like to hear a conversation about pornography. I have recently discovered that my ex-husband gave our young sons porn over a period of time, and I'm sick about it. What can we as a society do to let men know this is not okay?
Wow. I have to say, I'm so sorry for that happening within your family first. Pornography is something that demeans women so clearly and is an acceptable form of entertainment. And this is once again going back to the issue of women being held back in society and continue to be seen as, you know, property, you know, somebody that they have sex with. It's I would say that there's a great deal of concern that you say that the conversation keeps happening. The conversation is going to keep happening until we have an overall societal change in how we value women and humans, and that victims are not the one causing the crime. It is the person who is choosing. They are making a choice to use violence and power and control over the other individual. The victim is not choosing that to happen to them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Julie?
I think, I echo, I'm sorry that that happened within your family with the pornography. And it does come down to violence against women. There, you know, there's a trend that's happening where it's really difficult to honestly tell the difference between pornography and some perfume ads and some clothing ads. I went to a violence against women conference, and the whole keynote was on how do we tell the difference? It's okay. It's become a norm in our society that it's okay for a gang rape scene to be depicted for a perfume ad. It's in magazines that are on, you know, public newsstands. And so, again, it's societal changes, societal norms. This is not just a women's issue. This is a societal issue. This impacts everybody.
And I would encourage her to call one of the crisis lines to get more support around this issue.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To maybe help figure out the right way to talk to her sons.
To talk to her son, or are there deeper issues? To me, you know, that kind of behaviors, there might be other issues in the relationship. And therefore, I would say that calling either of our crisis lines would be helpful in trying to deal with the issue as a whole.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And you can call us if you'd like to join this conversation. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. If you're a manager or an elected official tackling this problem, what policies do you have in place to create a healthy climate in your workplace? And how do you handle allegations and discipline? Give us a call. Let us know what you're doing to change the culture of bad behavior within your organization. One email brought up Anita Hill. And we talked a bit about that earlier, about how she was just shredded for coming forward. Mm-hmm. Had to be a pretty horrific experience. Do you think, though, that now we're seeing some of those same lawmakers who spoke very disparagingly of her at that time are now coming forward saying they believe the women rather than Roy Moore, the Alabama Senate candidate? Does that indicate progress, or do you think they're just under a lot of pressure? What does this say to you?
Well, Susie. I would have to say, for my experience personally, this is from me, is that as a young woman who was 21 when that was happening, that I still did not have the historical knowledge and concept of what it meant, what she was experiencing. And there were certain things that seemed wrong about it, but I also didn't understand the deeper concepts of violence against women at that point in my life. And for the current, as far as the legislators, both federal and state, and their response to what is happening in Alabama, the fact that they are saying that they recognize that the victims, that they are speaking a truth that is very real. And I believe that that's very powerful. We can all change and learn and grow. And I would hope that these, you know, legislators would, because people look up to them. And, you know, we talked earlier about politicizing the issue. And this is highly political. This is critical. The conversation being the difference between, do you vote for a child molester or somebody who raped and assaulted teenagers versus a Democrat? And what's the choice? It's political. And it's a decision that is going to be a real challenge. It's going to reflect what is going on in this country, not just in one state, but in this country right now.
Mm-hmm. And would you like to add anything, Julie?
I feel like it is progress. And if you're something that we can see from this is, it's not easy to disclose you've been harmed. It is not a walk in the park when you come out and say, I've been assaulted, I've been harassed. And we can see that in the news. And so being able to have an individual in power say, I believe you, I think that's a great step. And they can model the behaviors that we want our society to see in taking that first step in believing individuals who say they've been harmed.
Absolutely. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more discussion. We've got some emails coming in and some calls about how to end sexual assault and domestic violence as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the lead federal agency, is hosting a series of public scoping meetings on the proposed Ambler Road between November 13th and December 12th in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and several communities near the Ambler Mining District. The BLM is developing an environmental impact statement and seeking public input. Learn more at blm.gov/AmblerRoadEIS. This message is sponsored by BLM.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are getting a few calls stacked up, so let's go to the phones. Beverly is in Craig. Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I want to bring up something that needs to take place, and that's elimination of the statute of limitations on sexual assaults, on incest, and on other sex crimes. The perpetrators are further empowered by the fact that there are statutes of limitations on how long a victim, I hate to use that phrase, can press charges against a perpetrator. And I'm familiar with it from a case here in Craig, where two of the three daughters were not allowed to press charges because the statute had expired, and so lesser charges were filed by the third of the three daughters, and the perpetrator got a lesser sentence. And being sexually assaulted is not something that women forget. I can speak from my own experience. It takes time to recognize and to process what has happened, and it takes a lot of courage to speak out. And anything that can help facilitate people to have that courage, no matter how many years in the past it took place, is necessary in this process.
Thank you, Beverly. You know, I wanted to get to the question of why women wait for so long often to come forward. I know myself, it was decades before I was finally able to speak publicly about it. And I understand those things, but I know a lot of people do not. And that's what causes a lot of doubt, because people say, well, why didn't they come forward 20 years ago? It's because you're, as Beverly said, you're processing this. You're figuring out how you can speak about it. It takes a lot of bravery to come forward. And it's embarrassing. And who wants to talk about something so awful? No one really wants to talk about it, but it's important to talk about. I think it varies widely by state. Any comments about the legal situation that she brought up here about limitations on this?
Get involved with your legislature. Let them know that this is something that we want to see made change. That's definitely going to be the first start. And so for individuals who want to take part in that, contact your legislature. Contact the people who are making these laws and rules, and we can see a change.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We have a caller in Anchorage. Hello.
Hello. My name is a little bit distinctive. I'm a transgender woman. I've been on both sides of this. Now quite some time ago, I used to look like a guy, and I'm sorry to say that I kind of participated in some of this bad behavior because I really needed to feel like I was safe and to fit in with the masculine culture for my own safety. And I kind of had the backing of all of the guys around me, and it really didn't seem like it was very much to do. Now my upper body strength is gone. I don't have guys standing around me anymore, and when I get this same behavior that I used to do myself, it's kind of horrifying. It just throws me off, but it all seems minor enough that I feel like if I speak up, then it's going to look like I'm the one overreacting. I feel it's a real cultural problem with masculinity. It's like masculinity kind of has this whole, there's something toxic in it, and it's not enough to just say, don't do that. There needs to be some positive ideas of what they should be doing instead.
Excellent point. Thank you so much for that perspective and calling in. I know that it's not easy to do that all the time, so thank you for that. Reaction to these comments?
Absolutely. Well, Julie? Thank you, for one, for stepping up and being brave enough to say you participated in some of that behavior and identifying that that wasn't okay, and giving our listeners a reason as to maybe why people might be participating in some of those behaviors. But it's kind of the socialization of man. You hit a really great point there. So we're not giving our men and boys behaviors to do. We're telling them maybe what not to do. And so offering them coping skills, offering them ways to handle their anger or frustration or emotions that they might be feeling. Women are given like a whole Crayola box of colors of ways we can behave and act. And sometimes men are given three. And, you know, that's the expectation. We hear it all the time. Man up. And I think that that's part of it, too, is let's offer some of those skills and resources to them.
Absolutely. Help on both sides. Mm-hmm. Support on both sides. Mm-hmm. It's how we all come along together. Let's take a quick call from Mindy. Hi, Mindy.
Hi. When that other gentleman called about women being scared in the dark and being aware of that, I had an incident. I was at Providence Hospital fairly late at night picking up some work in the professional building. It was pretty empty at night, and I was in the elevator, and the doors opened, and the gentleman said, "Are you comfortable with me coming in?" Which I thought was really awesome. I was fine with him coming in, but I thought it was nice of him to ask first, because I think a lot of women are very nervous being in a closed elevator with a man they don't know.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I was just very impressed with it. I thought, hey, maybe all this talk is actually... People are listening.
Well, and that goes back to, thank you for the call, Mindy. That goes back to this idea of being supportive on both sides. Because, yeah, it can be uncomfortable in an elevator. I had a bad encounter in an elevator myself one time. So I think it is important for everyone to be aware of what are someone being sort of mindful of trying to understand how it might feel from another's perspective. We had an email, we had several emails come in just recently, and one of them was asking for helping children understand that their bodies are their own. And this person was pushing back against parents who insist that their children hug someone when they say they're sorry. She was saying, let them decide if they want to hug somebody. Don't force them to do that, because that teaches them that your body really isn't your own. And I thought that was an important point. She also asked for you both to give out your numbers. We're coming up at the end here. We will link to those at alaskapublic.org. But please, Susie, give us the number for Awake that folks can call.
Mm-hmm. Awake specifically is in Anchorage, and it's 0100-272-0100.
And star.
We have 276-7273 or 1-800-478-8999.
We'll link to those. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil Alaska. Their financial investment and partnership with local companies at Point Thompson helps contribute to Alaska's economy and jobs for Alaskans. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.